I like a girl with a short skirt and a long jacket. This is Captain Barry with another episode of Big Fish Radio. That right there is Miss Alex behind the keyboards. And once again, Robert has stepped out, and we have Captain
Josh
Olive.
Olive and Grapes.
Editor of
Waterline Magazine. He is the fish coach.
And the radio show Waterline.
All the things.
Fishcoach.net.
All right.
Yeah. If you want to see all the things and all the stuff, you go to radiowaterline.com, you go to boatingandfishing.com, and you go to fishcoach.net. And that's where you'll find all the things.
I have a headache. I'm just kidding. That was a lot. But so the fish of the day is another freshwater species that can also be found in brackish water. And that species is, can we get a drum roll, Alex?
No. That's a terrible drum roll.
Sorry, I'm new to radio. Radio God.
So thank you for the drum roll. We are talking
He's also a drummer. We should mention that.
Yes, we definitely should.
Oh, we forgot
to mention more things about me.
Oh, my goodness. And he's a good lover, everybody. So,
and he's got a puppy.
The fish of the day is a gar.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm back up. All right,
hold on, stop. You said it was a species, and then you said it's gar.
Uh-huh.
Gar's not a species.
Oh, man.
Gar is a group of species of fish.
It is.
So which gar are we talking about here?
The spotted one.
Spotted gar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Long nose.
Is it freshwater or saltwater?
Wait a minute. Is it a long nose gar or is it a spotted gar?
I believe the one we have in our area is going to be the spotted one.
So, here in Southwest Florida, we are blessed with two gar species. We have long nose gar, which are obviously longer noses, much narrower bodied fish, but gets to a bigger size, pushing up to about 6 feet.
So close.
And then we have a Florida gar, which is a stouter animal and has a shorter but wider bill and only gets to about 30 inches, maybe 34.
Gotcha.
So
we're definitely talking about the long nose gar.
Yes. Now, do you want to talk about alligator gar?
That's going to be a different episode.
So. Well, the reason that I bring it up, though, is because 90% of the fishermen who I see going out there catching gar call every gar they see an alligator gar.
I know. And that's, I think, that's just only specifically found. They're not found in Florida, these alligator gar, are they?
So you can find alligator gar in extreme northwestern Florida.
Yes.
It's a fish mostly of the Mississippi drainage. Mm-hmm. But it's also a species that has been historically found in Cuba. So,
Cuba.
Right. Isn't that weird?
That's really weird. How are they not in Florida, but they can be on, like, it's like Florida's in the middle between, you know, where they're found in the U.S. and
so
Cuba.
You mentioned that these gar can survive in brackish water.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a fish that lives in the Mississippi River drainage, and let's take a giant Mississippi flood, and let's push some of those fish out into the Gulf of Mexico riding that flood. Where do the floodwaters from the Mississippi go?
Definitely bypassing Florida and into Cuba.
There you go.
Is that really how they got there?
Yes, sir.
What? So they lived in the Gulf of Mexico.
Briefly. Yes.
Wow. And it's the same species?
Yep.
The same exact breed genetic?
Same species. It's going to be a little bit different because it's obviously been separated from the parent species.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is the same animal.
Then why didn't any of those alligator gar hang a left or whatever it is and go into Florida and live there and make residence there?
So it probably only happened for brief periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably only a very limited number of those animals were able to survive in the floodwaters, and mm-hmm. they probably were riding basically a freshwater lens
right
across those currents, and those currents didn't happen to carry them to the west coast of Florida.
Wow. So those currents could have blessed us with another species in Florida if they came our way.
Yes.
Oh, man. Imagine having alligator gar here. That would be so cool.
Almost as cool as if we had sturgeon here. Oh, wait. We used to, but we killed them all. Never mind.
Oh, dang. Sore subject. There are some that are caught, like, randomly here and there, right? Up in, like, the Tampa area?
Up in, like, the Suwannee River?
Yes.
There's actually a pretty good number of them.
Yeah.
But we're supposed to have them in Tampa Bay. We're supposed to have them in Charlotte Harbor. We're supposed to have them in the Everglades, and we don't.
They were overfished or, like, all killed?
Yeah, killed out. Caught them all. And then, remember, we had some phosphate spills here in the Peace River.
Yes,
which
back
knocked
in
out the very last remaining specimens that lived in Charlotte Harbor.
That's what did put the knife or the dagger in was those phosphate spills back in like the early 70s, right?
Yeah, back in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, my gosh. That's so unfortunate. I can't imagine having sturgeon here.
Did you know that we just steamrolled right over something Alex was going to say like a minute and a half ago?
Yeah.
We never let her say it.
Hi.
Should we let her say it now?
Hi, my name's
Let's
Alex.
Just keep going.
I know nothing about gar. I know nothing about gar, and right now I'm blocked on are they saltwater or are they freshwater?
So it's a freshwater species that can survive in brackish water for an extended period of time, and some of them will be able to survive in saltwater for a brief period of time.
So here in
Does that help you?
Yes. Here in Florida, I might find them in the harbor during the summer when there's been a lot of rain, but typically I wouldn't find them.
You even sometimes find them out in the Gulf of Mexico when there's been a lot of rain, because the thing to remember about a gar is that he's not a very strong swimmer. So when current is kind of carrying him along, he doesn't get a lot of choice in where he goes. So when we have heavy rains and the Peace River is at flood stage, then yeah, sometimes those gar get washed right on out to sea.
Okay.
But those animals probably don't survive long term.
Okay. Interesting. All right, carry on.
What were we talking about?
A sturgeon?
We were talking about how the sturgeons were obliterated by phosphate mining here. So it's just, I love the evolution of this area. But anyway, so let's get back on to the long-nosed gar. So
long-nosed gar, that's where we were.
How long are they?
The longest one I've seen is probably right around 4.5 feet. Like, it was big. Like, the majority that we have in this area that you can commonly catch are, like, in that 2.5 to 3.5 foot range.
And a lot of those fish are going to be Florida gar. So take a good close look at your animal and understand the difference between those two fish, because the Florida gar are actually the more common species. But long nose get bigger, and so a lot more attention gets paid to those, because that's the fish that people are more likely to take pictures
of.
Whereas when they catch a Florida gar, they usually look at it, cuss it, throw it on the bank, and leave it to die.
Right.
So,
and I was going to say, there are two really cool ways to catch these gar. One is an artificial, which we'll leave for a little bit later. That's a very unique way. You don't even need a hook. I think Josh knows what I'm referring to.
I do.
And
Alex doesn't.
I don't.
Nanner, nanner.
Oh, man.
You're not in the club.
We're going to rope her in, if you know what I'm saying, Josh.
Oh.
Dang.
Teach
that was a foreshadowing right
Teach
there.
Me.
So the number one way that I like to actually, if I'm going for gar, I remember there was a spurt I had where all I wanted to do was catch these gar because they were so fun. And this was like back in high school. I would go to the Lashley Pier and dead bait them. And because gars have a very skinny nose, they don't inhale baits that easily. They have to, like, grab them, turn them around, and put them down the hatch so that they go down their small mouth easily.
You ever watched a heron eat?
Yes.
So watching a heron is a lot like watching a gar. He'll come
Great
up.
Great analogy.
He'll stab a fish. Of course, the gar is going to grab it in its mouth instead of stabbing it. But then he kind of wanders around with it for a little bit.
Yes.
And he lets it flop and do whatever it's going to do. And then once it's pretty much done with that, then he'll try testing it and kind of adjusting it in his mouth and seeing if he can toss it around without it trying to escape. And if he can, then he's going to toss it around until he can get it head first, and then he's going to go ahead and swallow it. And that process,
Goodness.
Depending on the size of his prey, might take anywhere from 2 to 20 minutes. And a gar works pretty much the same way.
That's exactly it. So going back to how skinny their mouth is, the bait that I found that would work the quickest where they would eat it as soon as possible compared to like a wide bait, like a sand bream or something of that nature, because they'll eat all different species of fish. My number one bait for them was just catching a ladyfish, because ladyfish are long, skinny, and narrow. And I would just put the whole thing on with a J-hook. That's another critical part of this, is a J-hook, not a circle hook. Their mouth does not do well with circle hooks.
Not at all.
It will just slip right out. I've had it happen so many times when I was targeting them. So a J-hook. And hook the ladyfish dead. You could put it on alive. It was dead on the bottom in an area you know there's a lot of gars. For me, that was the Lashley Fishing Pier. And it's so interesting. I would keep my reel and free spool. And you'll just notice the line just slowly like start taking off, very slowly, and just look at the surface every single time these gar would grab the ladyfish and just come to the surface and swim around with it. You can see your bait in this, like a T-boned in the gar's mouth, and he'll swim around it. He'll swim near the pier, and you'll see your line attached to it. So you know you can't hook him. The hook is like sticking out of the fish's mouth.
Right, it's several inches away from any part of the actual fish. So
it's like the weirdest thing. Like you want to set the hook so bad, seeing like a 4.5 foot fish with your bait, but you just have to wait for him to position it correctly and then for it to go down his mouth. And until then, you can't really set the hook or anything.
Yeah, and I was very frustrated by that when I was younger. I used to do a lot of shiner fishing for bass in my grandparents' pond, which had quite a few gar in it, and they would grab the shiner, and they would do exactly that. They would just parade around with it for a while. Yes. And eventually, I would get sick and tired of them parading and try to stick the hook in them and, of course, fail to do it. So the trick that I learned, and one that still works for them, is a two-hook rig. Put a hook in the nose, put a hook in the tail. That way, you actually can set the hook on those fish.
Interesting. So when they grab it in the middle of the fish, you have a hook on each side, so when you set the hook, you can possibly stick their like their bill or whatever.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, and it worked pretty well, but I actually developed a totally different method when I knew that there were a lot of gar around and I wanted to catch those fish, and that was using, bear with me because it's a little weird, a float and a spinnerbait. So I would put the spinnerbait under the float, maybe 3 or 4 inches, not a whole lot of line between the float and the spinnerbait. Cast that thing out there and wait until I saw a gar roll in the vicinity of that thing. Because you've seen gar roll, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know how they do that? For those of you who haven't, so what a gar does is he spends most of his time hanging out closer to the bottom. And then they will occasionally rise up to the surface and do this weird thrashing roll thing, which I'm not quite sure why they do it. They don't need air bubbles, but they do it anyway. And then dive back down towards the bottom. And when I saw a gar do that near my float, that meant that I knew there was a gar in the area. So what I would do is I would just start reeling it in nice and slow. And the gar would usually come over to it and start kind of mouthing at it, making like he was going to attack it. And when he did that, I would just stop it dead. So I've got the thing with the blades on it hanging out there. And if he didn't pay any attention to it anymore, I would just twitch it enough that the blades would move. And it would be enough that they would grab a hold of it. And I got pretty successful with catching them on spinnerbaits fished that one weird way.
Really? They'll even grab the hook?
Yeah. Yeah. They would grab the whole thing in their mouth. And because the hook is at the back end of the spinnerbait instead of at the front end like it is with a shiner, you could actually go ahead and set the hook on them.
Wow. That's very interesting. I never heard of that.
I had never heard of it either. I still have never heard of it. So in fact, I've never talked about it.
So you've heard about
until
you've
now.
Heard it here first. On Big Fish Radio, we've got
This is Josh's, a world exclusive.
Wow, we've got a banger right now. We've got first time ever heard. His secrets are coming out.
I don't think I've ever even written about it in the magazine. Now that I'm thinking about it,
you can read Josh's article titled "How to Catch Long Nose Gar"
next week.
Yeah, that's interesting. That they would. I don't know. That's pretty cool.
Now let's talk about your method, which is true. Tried, tested over many generations, and I'm shocked that Alex has not heard of this.
Have you heard of catching a gar with a rope?
So what you do is you get a lasso and you start spinning it over your head and you wait for that gar to come up to the surface, and when he gets there, you let fly. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to wrap him around the tail.
That's exactly that's generation four generations back that's been going on.
Is
she's
this
just,
like how Barry
head, so.
Convinced me he was going to hunt sharks with nunchucks?
Nunchucks.
That's exactly it. Yeah,
nunchucks
that's
are
a
for
funny
stingrays.
That's a
What's
funny story.
You?
Made out of weights. And
that
then,
was so funny. I had her believing a fake story of how I hunt sharks with nunchucks.
But fishing made out nunchucks. Of weights.
Weights and like snap swivels.
Nice. Very nice.
And pyramid sinkers. Those were really funny.
I always wondered what snaps.
So if you ever meet Alex.
Tell her anything.
You can and walk away and have her believe it. Just kidding. Just kidding. So, Josh, have you... well, you actually have a couple generations living in this area, right?
Five, actually.
5. So this has your like grandfather. Well, is there a long line of fishing in your family?
Yes, there is. Although it came through my grandmother, not my grandfather. Grandpa took me out in the woods. Grandma took me out on the water until I hooked her in the forehead with all 3 hooks from a Rapala. But that's another story. So, Grandma mostly cussed at gar. So she wasn't real interested in catching them with a rope. She was much more, let's go catch bass, usually using plastic worms.
So wait, was the rope story a real story?
Yeah, the rope story is a real story. We just haven't told you the real method yet. We're killing time. It's a long show. Settle down.
Okay.
Oh, you almost died.
No, this chair has missing a leg. I almost just died, literally.
If you'd like to donate bar stools,
tell her the rope method while you're still living.
Okay, so... what is it, like those synthetic ropes, right, Josh? The like
synthetic ropes are better, but they don't have to be synthetic ropes.
True.
You can use natural fiber.
True. You can. I've heard this done in many different ways. I'm just going to maybe keep it down to the simplest form. And that is taking maybe, what would you say, like a 6-inch section of rope?
6 inches will be plenty.
Right. And putting like a heavy jig head and hooking the rope on the jig head. Could be like a half-ounce jig head, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you unravel, like, half of that rope. Like, completely unravel all the individual strands. And, like, I know, like, I'm thinking of, like, the yellow plastic rope that comes on a lot of cheap things. That would
right.
Be,
the stuff that floats.
Yes, it floats, and it's very, like, wiry.
Yes.
So you unravel about half of that rope, put it on a jig head.
The thickness of what?
What's that?
How thick is that rope?
You know, quarter inch, eighth inch.
Right.
Okay. 3/8.
Just about there.
Whatever you happen to have.
Right. And when the gar in that area, you just reel it straight in like a lure, and those gars will come in like, they'll come and attack it and bite it. And the gar's teeth, there's so many little, like, fine little toothpicks that when they come and bite it, their teeth get caught in the rope. So they don't get hooked. The hook is just there to keep a weight on the rope. They just get so tangled, their nose, the long nose of the long nose gar gets tangled in the rope, and you just reel them in.
That's is it easy for you to untangle them to let them go?
It's not bad.
Easy enough.
Yeah, it's not nothing crazy. But that's
they could probably do it themselves if they would open their mouths, mm-hmm. but they don't.
They just clamp down. Right? They just clamp down.
Yeah.
So this is a very, like, I don't know, like a old-timers, a cracker way of catching gars.
It's definitely an old redneck way to do this.
There you go.
And the really old redneck way, you're fishing off of a bridge or a dam, so you're not using any kind of a weight on it either. You're just sometimes fraying the end of a rope and dropping that all the way down there and then hand lining your fish back up using that.
Right.
So, you know, if you're fishing off of a bridge or off of the top of a dam, then you don't need the jig head. You don't need to do any casting.
Exactly.
Simplified.
Exactly. So.
And, of course, why are we doing this? Old rednecks didn't catch things for fun. They caught things for food.
To eat, right. So,
which is why it really bothers me when I see somebody take a gar and chuck it out there on the side of the canal and let it dry out and die. Because if you wanted to kill that gar because you thought it was out there eating all of your fish, first of all, you're completely wrong, because if gar were going to eat up all the fish, then don't you think they would have done that at some point in the tens of thousands of years before there were any of us here to kill the gar and save the bass? Moron. But more to the point is, it's a really good food fish, and you're wasting it. Why are you wasting it?
Yeah.
Eat it.
Exactly. I know it's not even here. I've seen it up in Illinois on like some of the spillways. People just throw gars on the side, which is unfortunate. Just on the ground, but... it's not just a Florida thing, unfortunately, but...
they are kind of a pain to get into. My favorite method uses a heavy, heavy pair of kitchen shears, and basically you're cutting through those scales like you might cut through a can. And but once you get into that fish...
yeah, they've got... there are,
it's very tough.
I've tried eating one before. It is like... like a gator. Like, don't know. Its scales are so tough to get through. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not kidding about the heavy shears part.
You
want a serious thing here. But once you get into it, then the tenderloins of meat that run along both sides of the back, absolutely fantastic.
Gar back straps?
Yep, basically.
Yeah.
Yep. You can take that, and what I've done with it is minced it up and made like fritters with it. So it's an absolutely delicious fish.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't hold together the same way that some other fish will, but that doesn't mean you can't eat it. Texture is different, but... it's still delicious.
Interesting. That's so interesting.
Can you bring some for us on Saturday when we work?
I can. I won't.
Okay, cool.
So.
He's going to, if he prepares one for you, something tells me he's going to go get a half rotted gar on the side of the river and bring it.
He does love me that much.
Yep. And tell you it's fresh. Fresh, never frozen.
Yep, good stuff.
So, can we kind of recap? I don't think we talked about tackle.
Tackle.
So, generally, your bass tackle is going to be sufficient.
Yeah.
If you want to go with something a little bit heavier, if you're targeting big fish, then I get that. But. They're not the greatest fighters, really.
No, you're not going to get, like, spooled or anything like that. So, honestly, well, in my method of throwing a big dead ladyfish out, you might need something, a gear heavy enough to do that with, to throw, to have the weight. But when it comes to, like, fighting the fish, you, honestly, a 20-pound outfit is more than sufficient.
Yeah, more than enough.
You're not going to get spooled, and you just need enough force on the rod to set a nice J-hook.
Yeah, but it's a weak swimmer. It's not something that's, you know... I mean, honestly, a 15-pound gar versus a 3-pound bass, the 3-pound bass is going to be more fun to catch.
Right, 100%.
So with the gar, do we need a metal leader, or are we okay with a fluorocarbon mono?
The teeth are sharp, but they're like little needles, okay. So they're not going to cut through line like that. I've never had a gar bite through or cut through a leader. That yeah. I would ever really be too concerned about that.
And the fight's not going to be long enough where they're going to have enough time to cut through it anyways. So
yeah, you're basically just going to reel this thing in.
Yeah, so maybe 30-pound, 50-pound, you can throw up some wire. They're not picky.
If it makes you feel better, go ahead. But yeah. I don't think it's going to help or hurt. But, yeah, I mean, literally, if you're fishing for them with bait, you're going to spend longer between the time the fish hits it and the time you set the hook. Versus the time that it takes from you set the hook to you where you have the fish there.
Exactly.
So. Now, you do want to be cautious, though, when you're landing these fish, because you don't want to get your hand in those jaws, and you don't want to try to lip these things. They
Not
can make you
all.
Bleed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
the way that I've always done it is just grabbed them around the head, around the eye area. If you're not confident with doing that, then just net them. You know, sometimes their teeth will get tangled up in the net, just like they get tangled up in the rope. But if you're using a good rubber-dipped net, then you're not going to have that problem. And rubber-dipped nets are better for fish survival anyway. So,
awesome. Well, I hope you guys learned enough information on how to catch these long-nosed gar. And it's not just exclusive here to Southwest Florida. They're found throughout the majority of the state and wherever you may be located. And, thank you for coming on, Josh. Appreciate it. You can find Josh, plug away.
RadioWaterline.com, BoatingAndFishing.com, and FishCoach.net.
And Fish and Franks on Saturday nights with yours truly.
Yeah.
Come see us at Fish and Franks.
All right. And this is Captain Barry from TarponWorld.com. And Alex, would you like to sign off for us?
Bye.
Bye, kids.